Tuesday, final show of the week. Long weekend around here. Morning show with Preston Scott. Great to be with you this morning. Show number 4937. I'm Preston. That's Grant. It is May 25th. We'll take a peek at that in history in just a few moments. Our scripture today comes from Hebrews 10, 24 and 25. And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Now, it's interesting because in the ESV translation, they capitalize the day. Day. Day's capitalized. Well, what is that day? That day. The day of Christ's return. So let's back this out again. Consider how to stir one another to love and good works. I got a call yesterday from a colleague who said, I have a good friend who listens to your show every day, big fan. And he shared the resume of this gentleman, and it's an impressive resume of dedicating one's life to the betterment of others. And he said on his door, he has MAD. Make a difference. First, that blessed my heart. Because that is ultimately our goal here. Is it great to make a living doing something that you love? Absolutely. Is it great that we have been sustained by your faithfulness and support and encouragement and growth of this radio program by just sheer word of mouth and people stumbling upon it and staying? And I believe that's God's favor. You bet. The sustained success of this program and ratings and revenue for the company is just, that's just God. It just is. But ultimately, what matters the most to me is to spur you to consider ways to make a difference in other people's lives by blessing other people. And sometimes it can be by challenging their thinking. Sometimes it can be by just putting an arm around somebody and just letting them know you're there. Sometimes it can be just listening. Sometimes it can be just encouraging. I've met people in my life that question their value. And their value is found in that they're that person that when you see them, you're just happier because they have a smile on their face. They always seem to just be an encouragement. You know people like that. You might be someone who is like that. That's making a difference, just being you. But the rest of that verse, don't neglect meeting together. That's church. That's being in small groups. That's taking time to encourage others as a group and even more. And so, you know what? I kind of think of our meetings for 3 hours every day as that. Coming together and in the midst of all of the stuff, finding ways to encourage one another. And even more, as you see the day approaching. In other words, as you see the chaos of the world, which just is what it is, find ways. We certainly try to do that with some of the things we talk about. We try to walk that tightrope and that balance point of making sure you know what's going on, but giving you some other things as well. But no matter what, in the things that are going on that are a little bit dicey, always making sure that we find a way to have a laugh in the midst of it or find a way through it or to see a path of some sort or another that could be encouraging. MAD, the Mad Radio Network, back on the air again for Thursday on the radio program known as The Morning Show with Preston Scott, the Make a Difference Radio Network.
The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Take a peek inside the American Patriots Almanac. Don't forget now, Memorial Day weekend is here. Get out, enjoy, spend time, grill some food, but remember. Remember, and take time to pray a prayer of thanks for the men and women who have offered their lives in sacrifice to defend this country. And this goes back to our founding. And pray that God's peace and blessing would be on the family members left behind. Just keep some context to the weekend, okay? May 25th, 1787, Constitutional Convention opens in Philadelphia after reaching a quorum of seven states. 1935, Babe Ruth hits the last of his 714 home runs. 1961, President John F. Kennedy asked the nation to commit itself to the goal of landing a man on the moon before this decade is out. We choose to go to the moon.
Because it is easy, but because it is hard.
That's right. Good stuff. 1968, the Gateway Arch in St. Louis is dedicated. 1977, Star Wars opens. 1977, and we sat there with our mouths open, and little did we know it was a plastic model on a string.
So when it came out,
yeah,
did you know, like, immediately, oh, this is amazing. Everyone knew immediately this was
iconic.
A smash hit.
Absolutely. Good versus evil. At that time I was 16, about to turn 17. My junior year of high school, Star Wars came out.
I've always thought about what the initial movie experience would have been like to go see Empire Strikes Back when Darth Vader said, "I am your father." What were the audience reactions like? Were there some people like...
Oh, there were gasps.
I've always been curious, is like those iconic movie moments, what was the first initial experience for the fan in the theaters? I've always wondered.
The first time on the screen when they... I mean, the opening scene of Star Wars, when the... And I'm sure it's got a more appropriate title than I'm going to give it. Star Wars nerds know exactly what it's called, but the battleship cruiser of the Galactic Empire comes streaming in from the top of the screen, and you see this big thing. You're just like,
right.
If you had gum in your mouth, it probably fell onto your lap. I mean, it was just, dude.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah. Yeah, boy. I've probably owned 5 different copies of Star Wars, going from VHS to maybe Super VHS to DVD to another DVD because I wore that DVD out to Blu-ray, and maybe I can't remember if I have it in high def, ultra high def now or not. I don't know. But I will. I will have all of them except the first three. First three, it's like, yeah, I have them, but it's like, yeah, whatever. I don't care what format they're in. I have them. Okay, I got them. But I want the rest of them in 4K. Anyway, let's see. In 2008, the Phoenix spacecraft lands on Mars looking for evidence of microbial life. And 2012, the Dragon spacecraft by SpaceX becomes the first commercial spacecraft to rendezvous with the International Space Station. Can you believe it's been 11 years? That's crazy. Hey, real quick, Tina Turner passed away. It was announced yesterday. Icon. She was. Proud Mary, River Deep, Mountain High, resurrected her career in the 80s with What's Love Got to Do with It, the cover of Al Green's classic Let's Stay Together, 150 million records sold, get your mind around that, 11 Grammys, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as part of the Ike and Tina Turner review, and then in 91, and then her solo career landed her back in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2005, found her way into movies with Mel Gibson. I mean, come on. She was an icon. She was. Overused word, but not in her case. 17 minutes after the hour. Rest in peace. Minutes after the hour, the morning show with Preston Scott. A few minutes ago, Grant and I were talking about Star Wars and the Star Wars experience, and I know you guys talked about it over the weekend on the talent program. It's an interesting dynamic. First of all, did you know before the news came out that they were closing it about this Galactic Experience hotel that Disney had?
No, when I heard it on Talon, that was the first time I'd heard it, and then I looked it up.
You are married to Miss Disney. How did you not know?
We've kind of been...
I mean, she's like, the unofficial Miss Disney USA.
Oh, I know. We've been kind of been on a... Disney's on the doo-doo list.
I get it, but still.
So it's just kind of not been...
knowledge.
Yeah.
Her knowledge of all things Disney World. And I mean, and by that, I'm not talking about like the movies and all that so much as the Disney experience in person. This dude is married to the lady that's like the... she knows everything. If you ever wanted to go to a Disney theme park and wanted to know how to make the best of your day... or 2 days, or 3 days, boom. She's your man.
She knows all the cheat codes. Yeah. But the thing is that was part of the problem. All the cheat codes, I say cheat codes like I'm a gamer. All of these different ways
in
which...
insider tips.
Yeah, thank you. Insider tips for Walt Disney World don't really work anymore.
Right,
because
yeah.
Disney's changed so much of their policies that the experience is wildly different. And last time we went, like a year and a half ago, we were just kind of like, okay, yeah, we don't have to do that anytime soon. So we were both kind of disappointed.
Well, the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser was a hotel. You'll notice I said the word was.
Yeah.
Because they're shutting it down in September.
Gee, couldn't have seen this coming?
And here's the thing. It's a shame they didn't make it look like a Galactic Star Cruiser. It looks kind of funky until you get in. And once you get in, it is a full-blown, you are on board a Galactic Star Cruiser. Complete with stormtroopers and the bridge. And, I mean, it is, you are living on board.
Yeah.
With evil. Kylo Ren could come up at any moment. And I would imagine it's almost dangerous to be Kylo Ren with some of the little kids running around.
What, getting screamed in your face?
Oh, getting kneecapped.
And
some little kid runs up behind you and takes his tennis racket out and hits you behind the knees.
I was thinking all of their toy lightsabers just getting hit all of a sudden.
Oh, I'm talking more. They know that lightsaber isn't real. They'll come at him with a tennis racket and drop him to his knees. Anyway, they're shutting it down. A 2-day immersive visit could run you $20,000. The basic cost of this thing, I've got the costs here. Here we go. A 2-day experience is a cabin or suite, immersive entertainment, food, beverage, in and out. Admission to Disney Hollywood Studios included, which gets you into the Star Wars land that they have there. A room can accommodate 3 adults, 1 child, priced at $59.99, not including taxes and fees. Cabin with 2 guests comes in at $48.09. 3 guests comes in at $52. One suite, the Grand Captain, holds 8 individuals, a kitchenette, living room, multiple bathrooms. And there you go. But they're shutting it down. And what's interesting about this is they're trying to spin all this, including their decision to not build a campus near the Disney facilities as a slap on Ron DeSantis. No, this is because Disney can't make money hand over fist like they were. They've upset enough people.
Yep.
That it's hurting their bottom line. This has nothing to do with Ron DeSantis. This has everything to do with the sustainability of Disney's pricing model in the wake of woke programming and woke staffing and woke policies. They're laying off thousands and thousands of people. And I'll go so far as to say the boost to the resume that one used to get by stating that they worked for Disney just isn't there anymore. It just doesn't carry the same panache. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I'll be honest with you. It would have been fun to go into that Star Wars thing as one of the founding watchers of the Star Wars universe back in 1977. But there's no way I'd pay that. Not a chance. All right, let's come back with the most obvious big story in the history of the radio program.
Preston Scott.
This is the way.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Our border is a disaster. Crime infests our cities. The federal government makes it harder for families to make ends meet. And the president flounders. But decline is a choice. Success is attainable, and freedom is worth fighting for. Righting the ship requires restoring sanity to our society, normalcy to our communities, and integrity to our institutions. Truth must be our foundation, and common sense can no longer be an uncommon virtue. In Florida, we prove that it can be done. We chose facts over fear, education over indoctrination, law and order over rioting and disorder. We held the line when freedom hung in the balance. We showed that we can and must revitalize America. We need the courage to lead and the strength to win. I'm Ron DeSantis, and I'm running for president to lead our great American comeback.
There you go. Florida's governor made the announcement official yesterday. It was a debacle, and I made a prediction. Grant was texting me, and what did I write?
Something to the effect of the DeSantis team will attempt to spin the debacle into a, oh, man, look at all the support. It crashed Twitter's servers because it was so.
And what happened?
The Christina Pashaws and Taryn Fenskys of the world.
And Elon Musk.
And Elon Musk have that's been their take on Twitter for the last, 12 hours or so.
That's their story, and they're sticking to it. Yep. And you know what? There could be some truth to it.
I have no doubt that Twitter was, they had no idea how big it was going to be. But there was a part of me that's like, surely they could have stress tested the Twitter servers before, but I don't know.
Well, I don't know how you make that up.
I don't know.
How do you make up a feed to test it? So here's
half
my question
a million
for you.
People, yeah.
Mr. Social Media.
More than that.
Okay, Mr. Social Media and producer of the morning show with Preston Scott?
Not what
more
I
than
meant.
That?
Not what I meant, but okay.
You are the director of social media for the radio program. So was the announcement much more eagerly anticipated and watched than what you and everyone else expected?
I think so.
What does that tell you now? Does it tell you anything?
I haven't decided yet. I haven't quite been able to put my, put my thumb on it, whatever the phrase is, put my finger on quite what the pulse is. If it was a, overwhelming support for DeSantis or if there was an excitement regarding an announcement being done on Twitter rather than a conventional media hit, you know. Haven't decided.
Former President Donald Trump posted the single most bizarre response I've ever seen on Truth Social. Rob, my red button is bigger, better, stronger, and is working. Truth, yours does not. Per my conversation with Kim Jong-un of North Korea, soon to become my friend. WTH quadruple exclamation points, question marks. What? What?
That's hilarious.
My man, the Donald. 40 minutes after the hour. Here we go.
Welcome to The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
42 minutes after the hour, The Morning Show. Steve Stewart, just a little bit. Dr. David Hart's next hour. Dr. Ed Moore in the third hour, a little more history. This is going to be a hybrid show. Final half hour of the third hour is going to resemble the final half hour of the Friday show. We're going to have some headlines from the B and a laugh or two, good news story. We are off tomorrow and Monday, back Tuesday with Matt Staver. Matt has Liberty Counsel is starting their own online school. Open to anybody. And it is the curriculum. Wow. Parents looking for options. Matt's going to talk about the school coming up. I believe it's going to open next year. But we'll get to all of that next week on Tuesday's show. Jerome Hudson back with us next week as well. Our fifth Wednesday Q&A with the Talon team is Wednesday. So we have a busy week already set up. And, of course, we will have no shortage of things to talk about with regard to the race. You know, I listen to Mike Huckabee, and Huckabee said, you know, the governor's got a significant problem. Now, let's remember, Mike Huckabee's daughter, governor now of Arkansas, worked for Donald Trump. So I have no doubt that Huckabee's very close to Donald Trump. But he said he broke a promise. He's got a credibility problem. Ron DeSantis said he wanted to be the governor of Florida for four more years, and he broke that promise. He wants another four-year job. So he owes us an explanation. Do you not like your job anymore? Well, come on, Mike. You're better than that, and you're smarter than that. In my opinion, all DeSantis has to say is we can't afford to lose the White House. And I'm going to let Republicans decide whether they prefer Donald Trump or me or someone else. But we can't lose. And he is of the opinion that Donald Trump is too toxic to win a general election. That may or may not be true. I do not know. But it is certainly not an analysis that he's alone in thinking. Not at all. So DeSantis is rolling the dice. He believes he needs to do it now. He's got a string of achievements. He's proven his executive mettle. Now's the time. I wish he'd have waited, but I knew he wasn't going to. I knew money was lining up. I had some inside information a couple months ago. I knew this was coming. I just wasn't at liberty to say anything. But anyway, is what it is. And we'll certainly benefit from it. We'll have lots to talk about, lots of things for you to talk about, lots of things for you to think about. Apparently, retail workers, fast food workers on TikTok claim they collect rewards points from customers' leftover receipts. There are, I guess, apps out there And there's a hashtag called Fetch Rewards. It has more than 501 million views, half a billion views. And it's a platform. There's a platform called Fetch. And it's a rewards app that lets users rack up points in exchange for gift cards. And so retail workers are going there, and they're taking our receipts, and I say ours because I'm notorious for leaving, for saying, yeah, I don't want a receipt. Well, that's going to change. So, yeah. So that's just an FYI. That's one of those things I just wanted you to be aware of. And then a listener sent this my way. New York City will begin tracking the carbon footprint of household food consumption and putting caps on how much red meat can be served in public institutions as part of a sweeping initiative to achieve a 33% reduction in carbon emissions from food by 2030. Remember what we've always said. Global warming. COVID. Energy. Green. It's all about one word. Control. Controlling now what you eat and how much of it.
The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Last segment of the radio program is just another illustration of why you listen to the entirety of the show. Think about it. Most morning drive programs in the news talk world revolve around 10-minute increments and a repetition of the same thing every 10 minutes. To that. Never believed in it, never did it, never will. I've had consultants come in and tell me, you know, you really ought to be. No. I believe we can create a program that people will listen to. And, oh, by the way, we're a little more forward thinking in a world of podcasting. Who's going to listen to a podcast that repeats the same things every 10 minutes? It's not going to happen. You'd have missed on what New York City's doing. And those types of stories are harbingers for what is coming nationally, the effort to try to control what you eat. They're trying to control our light bulbs, our gas appliances. They're trying to control our gas grills. They're trying to control what kind of fuel we use. They're trying to control the light bulbs that we have. They're trying to control how much water we consume. They're trying to control everything, now our food. Not just that, the receipts. Who knew? Who knew there was a way to capitalize? Now, at least they're not stealing and are able to steal your debit card number because that's wiped out. But they still try to do that anyway. But anyway, I've got to get to this. This is too good. I think I mentioned it yesterday on the program that there was this incredible brief Twitter dialogue that unfolded, and it started because of U.S. Senator Ted Cruz responding to the NAACP. NAACP calling on blacks to leave Florida and never visit, which, of course, is just the typical race-baiting nonsense that the NAACP now throws out. A once legendary, honored organization, and I mean that sincerely, now reduced to the same rubbish of race baiting that's been going on for a couple of decades now. Anyway, Cruz responds to it all. This is bizarre and utterly dishonest. In the 1950s and 60s, the NAACP did extraordinary good helping lead the civil rights movement today. Listen to these words. Have you heard them before? Dr. King would be ashamed of how profoundly they lost their way. Then a user on Twitter pipes up and says, that Cruz would have been the first in line to filibuster against the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. He replies, nonsense. That shameful filibuster was led by Democrats, your party. My party, the Republicans, proudly voted for the Civil Rights Act at a much higher percentage than the racist Dems. Then comes AOC. She joins in saying, why don't you go ahead and tell people what happened to the parties after that, Ted? He said, fine. And so here goes Cruz. He tweets out, sure. First, the Dem Party, founded by the KKK. Then, the Dem Party wrote Jim Crow laws. Then, the Dem Party filibustered the Civil Rights Act. Today, the Dem Party filibusters school choice, trapping millions of black kids into failing schools. Today, the Dem Party pushes abolishing the police, which results in many more black lives murdered. Today, every Dem senator voted against my bill to stop D.C. from throwing 40% of black kids out of schools because of the vax mandate. And he goes on from there. So there. After the hour of the morning show with Preston Scott. Good morning. That's Grant Allen over there in Studio 1A. I'm here in Studio 1B. It is show 4937. And so it begins. Second hour of the program with Steve Stewart. He, of course, is the executive editor of Tallahassee Reports website, TallahasseeReports.com. And wowzers.
You thought it'd be a lazy Thursday, huh?
No, I knew better than that. Oh, man, you're just squealing away.
I'm sorry. I'm turning it down.
Deaf people sometimes use those headphones, and so, that can happen. Right, anyway, right. Do you want to get a disclaimer out of the way first?
Well, yeah, and we can talk. There's a story that we have up that I think requires a disclaimer, which I have on the story.
Yeah.
Listen, you have to make decisions when you write about things. You know, as Taos reports, we were very focused on City Hall corruption 10 years ago. We've expanded for a number of reasons, because we're sort of good at what we do, and the community needs it. And the second thing is that, you know, the landscape of the media empires has drastically changed.
Significantly.
And so, anyway, we've grown. We print a newspaper twice a week, so we get a lot of phone calls about different things I have to pass on.
Twice a month.
Things we have to pass on because we can't get any documentation, things like that. But, you know, so we've expanded. We're covering schools now. We're covering, you know, we write about coaches and it started at Childs, where I have kids that go to school. I'm familiar. I know Joe Burgess. And, you know, but there's been issues there with a coach. And,
well, the reality is the old however many degrees of separation is even less in a town this size. You just intersect with everything at some point.
Right. And so one of the things that I've sort of, when you do these stories that you can be, you know, when your bias can be questioned, or objectivity would be a better word.
Yep.
You've got to be really sure you've got the story, right?
You got to be fact-based.
Right. And so this story that we've done involves a volleyball coach. And as you know, I have kids in volleyball. I'm very involved in the volleyball community. And it's probably one reason why I know about the story, right?
Sure.
But you have to make this decision. What are you going to do? And, you know, the story that we have up is very fact-based. It's about, you know, there's a couple of, this is a really rich story in a number of veins. First, it's about a coach that's been sanctioned by the Florida region of USA Volleyball, which is the sanctioning body of volleyball outside of high school, club volleyball.
Club volleyball,
which is a huge, growing, you know, program.
It's like all club sports, and on whether it's male or female, they're huge.
Right. So about a year and a half ago, this coach was sanctioned after a complaint related to the treatment of players. And it takes a lot to get sanctioned. I mean, as you can imagine, a parent has to be so aggrieved that he's going to file a person is going to file a formal complaint. And you've got to have corroborating evidence. The U.S. The Florida region of USAV has a process set up to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went through this and issued they had findings, and there was a probation letter sent out. It was a flagrant.
How long ago was this?
This was in 2021.
Okay.
That resulted in her losing her contract not being renewed at the local club volleyball facility here. That was Latoya Washington was in charge of that. I've talked to her. She said, I saw the findings. I felt like it was, I had to not renew the contract.
Okay.
There was a story pursued by a local media outlet, and it never showed up. Okay, and there was rumors about this finding, and you know, I heard about it. Didn't do anything. So this year she moved on to another volleyball club that was started by Joey Becker.
Mm-hmm.
And we started
longtime respected volleyball coach at Leon High School.
Definitely,
I know Joy.
And so there started to hear rumors about issues again. And so I had parents that called me. I said, look. You know, these are accusations. And then I got an email that was sent out by Joy Becker, and that sort of put bookends on this. We have a factual email, and then Steve Bishop, who is the director of the Florida region of USA Volleyball, confirmed to me that she is being openly investigated for complaints at this new volleyball club that she started.
Quickly, before we take a break, that email that you said was sent out by Joy, was that sent to you or was it sent to parents forwarded to you?
It was sent to parents, and evidently it's all over town. I got it. Okay. I didn't even get it from one of the parents. I got it from someone else.
Gotcha.
And so that's what the story is based on. And, you know, again, from the objectivity of it, you can kill the messenger and say I shouldn't have written the story, but you can't argue with the facts. I mean, she was sanctioned by Florida Region of USA Volleyball, and we can continue.
We'll pick up there with Steve Stewart of Tallahassee Reports next.
The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Steve Stewart with us this morning, as always, on Thursday, following issues, following stories that others don't follow, others don't report, others don't get the stories, because Tallahassee Reports is trusted with stories now. We talked about that last week. We talked about how the news cycle works and where trust comes from and how it's earned. And the website, TallahasseeReports.com. And we're talking about local volleyball.
Well, yeah. And I think the thing that we wanted to continue talking about is the lack of other local media coverage of new, you know, factually based things that are coming out.
And so let me just reset real quickly. Part of the issue is we have a story. That's indisputable. There's just not a story about that story, and that's the other part of this.
Well, right. I mean, I think if you go back and you look at what happened a year and a half ago, and that a local media outlet pursued a story, and then it didn't happen. Right. So they obviously said that a formal finding, putting a coach on probation and her being let go from the club, was not a story.
What would you say, though, to an argument that says, look, sorry, Steve. Appreciate that, you know, kids that you know, including your own, plays volleyball, but it's not really that big a deal to anybody else.
Right. Well, I think if you start looking at the issue of bullying and you go Google that on the internet and look at how much of a problem this is, you would at least say, wait a minute, she's the coach. She'd been the coach for 10 years at a high school, so we see this as a problem. And look, if you look at this and say, well, look, the Florida region of the USA Volleyball, you know, it doesn't have any credibility. Well, it does. So, I mean, you have to address it. And look, you can even do the story and the coach can say, well, look, I was railroaded. You know, there was parents that were just off the, you know,
upset that their kid wasn't getting playing time.
All right. Well, it happens a second time in a different club. And you actually have the coach that is saying an email, you know, we need to retract these complaints. I promise not to leave this person alone with your kids. I mean, don't you think that's
And that's the email you're referring to that's the bookend.
It is. So look, it's not, so the fact that I reported it, I can understand that people are upset, but they shouldn't be up. I'm the messenger. You want to be upset about me reporting it. That's part of it. But the other part of it is, wait a minute, what's going on here? Why is this happening? And then, obviously with club volleyball, you have students at Leon that are playing club volleyball. So there is a transition, there is a connection. And so when we asked Leon County Schools if they knew about the sanction by USA Volleyball, they said they found out about it after the fact. And when I asked, did they take any action? They said no. So I think that's another story.
Because it was club related, not school related.
Right, but you would think that you would say, well,
I'm just guessing.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that would be their argument. But if I'm the athletic director and my job is not just to advocate for my coaches but to protect my students, I would be somewhat interested to say you took no action. Say, yeah, we talked to USA Volleyball, got the background of the complaint, and we were satisfied that you know it won't affect them. They just said they took no action. Okay. So it's almost like they completely ignored it. And so now the second one, you have a coach that is concurrently under investigation. Now, the dirty little secret here about this is that this is a very intimate relationship between a coach and high school kids. And it's a
well acquainted.
It's an authoritarian relationship. I mean, the coach has got the power.
Needs to be.
Right. And you know, like in one of the critiques, the comments was, well, you know, you're not these comments or allegations are anonymous. Well, that's the whole point. What happens is people don't want to come out because they're going to get bullied. That's the vicious circle. If you come out and complain, you get benched and bullied.
But the numbers are growing in this issue.
Well, one of the questions is you don't give examples. Well, first of all, we address factual things in this article. There are plenty of examples, and you've got to have numbers because I'm not going to reveal names of high school students so that they can be bullied by... I mean, that's the whole vicious circle that we're following here.
Yep.
So you've got to try to figure out a way to break it. And look, this is just not an issue. Leon, we've got an issue going on at Childs right now where the coach is on administrative leave for...
In football.
So this is something that the light needs to be shown on it. And I don't understand, again, why hasn't local media picked up on this story? This is factually based.
Steve Stewart with us. More to come on The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Final segment with Steve Stewart of Tallahassee Reports. Again, subscribe, get that paper, and you'll get fact-based reporting. Man, when you say, hey, don't shoot the messenger, you're speaking my language because that's what I deal with every single day. I have to break bad news to people, and it's not my fault. Northeast Gateway, Northeast Park. I mean, what in the world have we got now? Where are we?
All right, so this park that, you know, it's been 15 years in the working is, you know, running to another stag. The last blueprint meeting, Commissioner Brian Welch made an emotional, overly emotional appeal. The project that went from 12 million to 18 million, they delayed it. The scope, I had some questions about the scope, mostly focused on baseball.
Mm-hmm.
But now Leon County Commissioner Christian Caban, who was recently elected from District 2, has issued and we have a story up on this, has issued a letter, which is a little bit rare, but, you know, again, sort of someone who's been in office for 2 years, a younger person, and probably doesn't, you know, it's a new approach, not sort of kept under the thumb by the old guard, and was very the letter's very outspoken about, first of all, Welch's advocacy for the park, who argued that the Northeast deserved it. Christian Caban said, look, I think there should be a park, but I don't think that we should start talking about who deserves what, because there are a lot of different districts that have different sets of concerns. There are some districts that need sidewalks so kids can walk to school. And yes, the Northeast needs a park, but it's not, you know, those are different level of priorities.
Wants and needs are different.
Right. And so he really did criticize Welch for the way he advocated for the park. And he was not the only one. Commissioner Proctor was a little bit riled up about that also.
Sure.
Now, we do have a response from Commissioner Welch in the article. And, you know, again, he's advocating for his district in the Northeast, and it's a budgeted park. Now, the thing is what Commissioner Caban is saying is what a number of people have said. And this, when you start reading the tea leaves, this is sort of this where this is heading. Is that, look, it was a $12 million park, and then it became an $18 million park. And you start looking around the district of other needs, you know, and it looks like they, you know, the commissioner will support a $12 million park, but we're really not interested in spending more money than that on a Northeast park. So once again, the Northeast park is sort of in the crosshairs, and it's going to take, I think this is going to take Commissioner Welch all his political skill that he has to sort of, you know, go through the wickets of getting not only the scope correct, but understanding, you know, what he's dealing with. Because look, the city doesn't have an advocate for the Northeast. And when you advocate for the wealthiest part of the town who's paying most of the taxes, you do have to be careful how you do that. You know, we need a gym, right? We don't have and for people to have to drive across town to go to volleyball or basketball when they sign up for city stuff is a drag for a lot of families. But you say that, and it's like, then you get these other parts of the community say, well, we don't even have sidewalks or lights at
and other parts of the community say, well, we don't have 20 soccer fields, or we don't have all the tennis courts.
You have to be very careful of how you advocate for it.
Yeah.
And I think that is the issue that we're running into. So the meeting is June 15th to sort of resolve this, and it's going to be interesting to see
what
happens.
Can it be resolved without the city input, though?
Well, no, because it's a blueprint.
Yeah.
It's being funded by Blueprint, which involves all 12 commissioners. But the thing is it's sort of getting – it's taking friendly fire from both city and county,
yeah.
which if I was Commissioner Welch, I would sort of step back and say, wait a minute. This isn't one rogue commissioner coming after me. We got a problem here.
Yeah, you've got to build some consensus at this point.
Exactly. And so
to get it done.
So like I said, they'll have a meeting June 15th and we'll see what happens.
All right, lastly, is there any, without going into what's happening with City Walk and the homeless shelter, broadly speaking, is there any movement on homeless policy in this community?
Listen, there was a workshop on the 23rd. I've got to go through and look at the meeting in detail, but we did a story about the number of recommendations that were proposed to the Leon County Commission. Panhandling at street intersections is trying to be addressed. One thing that I want to share with your listeners that they're probably not going to hear you anywhere else. There's a group that does a person in time count for the number of homeless people. Okay, it covers an eight county area, including Leon. Leon is responsible for 95% of the homeless. It increased 22% based on the last PIT count. It's done every January. They actually go out and count homeless people. The count came back with 800 people as being homeless over an eight county range, which 95% of that is in Leon, which means about 730. Right. So you got 300,000 people in Leon County, and you got 730 that are homeless. You've got two local governments with budgets of approaching $1 billion. You know, I think that it should be a problem we should be able to solve, don't you
think?
Well,
money doesn't solve these issues.
Exactly. That's the point there.
It's policy and ordinance.
It is. And so I think that the county commission understands that now, yeah, based on the recommendations, but we'll have to see what happens. And I mean, there's some funding and there's some ordinances like you've talked about. We'll see what the impact is.
Can't wait till next Thursday.
Thank you, Preston.
Thanks, buddy. All right, Steve Stewart with Tallahassee Reports. Again, subscribe, TallahasseeReports.com.
This is The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
I said last hour, most obvious big story in the press box in the history of the show for 1,000, Alex.
Our border is a disaster. Crime infests our cities. The federal government makes it harder for families to make ends meet. And the president flounders. But decline is a choice. Success is attainable. And freedom is worth fighting for. Righting the ship requires restoring sanity to our society, normalcy to our communities, and integrity to our institutions. Truth must be our foundation, and common sense can no longer be an uncommon virtue. In Florida, we prove that it can be done. We chose facts over fear, education over indoctrination, law and order over rioting and disorder. We held the line when freedom hung in the balance. We showed that we can and must revitalize America. We need the courage to lead and the strength to win. I'm Ron DeSantis, and I'm running for president to lead our great American comeback.
Whammo. There you go. DeSantis for president.
All right. So how do you say his name?
Well, he always has said it. I would defer to how he says it, but
I've seen in different videos he said it differently, so I'm just curious.
I've never heard him say it differently than Ron DeSantis.
Oh yeah. I definitely, someone posted like back to back side by sides of him saying it differently, so I don't know. I'm going with DeSantis because I think that's the original Italian pronunciation, but anyway. DeSantis.
DeSantis. You got to add a little flavor to it there now.
DeSantis. Yeah.
I think he's fine when someone says Ron DeSantis.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
But
He's like, I don't care how you say it. Just vote for me.
Right, pretty much.
That's where he's at right now. So as I predicted, the crash has been spun into, well, the popularity. We had no idea it would be so popular. And I tend to agree. I don't think it's an egregious spin. I think it's probably the best way to phrase what happened, and that is that there was more interest in Ron DeSantis' announcement than they anticipated. I don't know that you can have a server big enough for whatever. I mean, what's going to happen when Tucker Carlson goes on the air for the first time? You know, so I guess in that regard, this is a good rollout to see. Now, for his part, Donald Trump had one of the most, you've got to be kidding me, reactions I've ever read. This is what he posted in reaction to Ron DeSantis' announcement. Rob, my red button is bigger, better, stronger, and is working. Truth. Yours does not. So I guess he's saying his red button is truth. Per my conversation with Kim Jong-un of North Korea, soon to become my friend. Is he calling him Rob instead of Ron to just try to goad him or something? I mean, people are out there. Some of the comments that followed that, Matthew Brodsky, a political strategist, senior fellow at the Gold Institute for International Strategy, said bonkers. This is what he tweeted out. DeSantis has been talking about detailed and substantive policy issues for the last hour. This is what you get from Trump. If people want idiocracy and entertainment, Trump might be the better option. If you want substance on the right, DeSantis is it. David Ryobi, I don't know how to say his last name, political commentator, fellow at the Claremont Institute. Nobody thinks this is sane. They're just afraid to admit it. Get ready. This is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. Here's what I expect. I expect Donald Trump to get unbelievably personal, and I expect Ron DeSantis to not. That's the big difference. On a lot of policy, they're very similar. The difference is DeSantis had a cooperative legislature here in Florida. Trump never had that in Washington. Additionally, Trump has Trump to deal with. Now, I mean, let's be candid. Trump is his own worst enemy. That is not the case with DeSantis, so we'll have to see where this goes.
The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Let's get you feeling a little bit better. What do you say? You know, we are so very good at treating symptoms. Challenges, though, dealing with root causes. And so we've done this segment based on that with Dr. David Hartz for many, many years. This is Optimum Health Naturally. Good morning, Dr. Hartz. How are you?
Good morning, Preston.
Tell me a little bit about, histamines. We hear about antihistamines. What is, help me out here. Help a brother out.
Well, what we're going to talk about this morning is something called histamine intolerance or mast cell activation syndrome. That kind of sounds really complicated, but I think why this is so important right now is because we're seeing this increase post-COVID. It seems to be part of the gift that keeps on giving is that there's something called mast cells, which are part of the white blood cells that actually carry histamine, this substance that we don't like when it's released too much in our bodies because it causes migraine headaches, it causes chronic nasal congestion and drippy nose. You know, like many times, like when you eat, a lot of people eat, and right as they're eating, they start to get kind of a runny nose or start to cough because of nasal drainage, fatigue and hives and digestive issues. Nausea, but some of the other things that can cause is like high blood pressure or regular heartbeats. And this is all part of like long COVID syndrome also, where people can't seem to get over this thing. So that's why I'm trying to kind of talk about this now, because people are struggling with this. And it's really caused by something called DAO or diamine oxidase. It's a it's an enzyme that's released to break down histamine as it increases in your body. And when there's a shortage of that, then histamine increases. Now, of course, that's what we take antihistamines for, is to try to offset some of this histamine.
Okay.
Also, it's also caused by too much mast cell releasing of this histamine. And we don't know why that's doing that, but it sure seems to be related to some of the long COVID syndrome symptoms that are occurring after COVID and after maybe the vaccinations also. So this is something a lot of people are struggling with. And there's some things you can do to help it. First of all, it can be aggravated by bacterial overgrowth syndrome, like gut problems and so forth. So they need to be evaluated by a functional medicine practitioner if you have gastrointestinal problems along with it. Also, leaky gut syndrome, those same things we talked about for years, they can aggravate this, okay? Then also, histamine-rich foods, which there's just a bunch of those, I would suggest you just go ahead and Google those, just histamine-rich foods, and you get a whole list of those. But one of the cover when we talk about this morning is some of the things we can do ourselves. Some quercetin, vitamin C seems to be very helpful with this. Also, be sure you take supplements that gives you enough copper. Copper seems to be a real aggravating factor when it's low. You can take those different things and also watch some of the foods that, let me give you some of the foods. Citrus, if you notice if you eat citrus and you get a reaction from that. Gluten certainly is something that seems to be very aggravating with this, as it is with many things. Some dairy substitutes, even dairy, sometimes can do this. And so you'll have to go through and figure out individually which foods aggravate it, but there are a large number that do it. Also, I'm not much for prescriptions, you know that, but in this case, one of the ways you can help diagnose it is to take certain antihistamines and see if they help. To help with some of the symptoms of fatigue, I mean, exercise fatigue, where you exercise and all of a sudden you get totally just exhausted.
Right.
Some of the ones that seem to work well are Clarinex, Zyrtec, and Allegra. You can try some of those, and they're what they call type 1, or H1 type of antihistamines. If they do help, then you know you may have the syndrome. I know this is a little complicated, but this is really a big problem.
All right.
And it's causing people a lot of trouble.
Dr. Hartz, as always, we got to go, but thanks so much for the time.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Dr. David Hartz with us this morning. Optimum Health Naturally on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
1 hour ago on this radio program, I showed my lack of discipline and did not properly get through a segment, rushed to the top of the hour. And there's one part of this show, the top of the hour, that I must be disciplined because we have what are called hard breaks. We have live satellite news coming. We can't do anything. We gotta hit it. So I am going to do a story a second time and do it properly because it's too important. There's too much good fodder for you to use against your liberal Democrat buddies. It is a Twitter back and forth started by Ted Cruz in response to the NAACP. We'll get to the gist of it. He said Dr. King would be ashamed of how profoundly the NAACP has lost its way. A user responds to Cruz's comment saying, you would have been the first in line to filibuster against the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. Cruz responds, nonsense, that shameful filibuster was led by Democrats. Your party. My party, the Republicans, proudly voted for the Civil Rights Act in much higher percentages than the racist Dems. Then comes Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to the battle. And you know what they say about doing a battle of wits with an unarmed... Never mind. She pens, why don't you go ahead and tell people what happened to the parties after that, Ted? Cruz took her up on the offer. Sure. First, the Dem Party founded the KKK. Then the Dem Party wrote Jim Crow laws. Then the Dem Party filibustered the Civil Rights Act. Today, the Dem Party filibusters school choice. trapping millions of black kids in failing schools. Today, the Dem Party pushes abolishing the police, which results in many more black lives murdered. Today, every Dem senator voted against my bill to stop D.C. from throwing 40% of black kids out of schools because of the vaccine mandate. He continued, the Republican Party was founded to oppose slavery. Our first Republican president was Abraham Lincoln, who won the Civil War and ended slavery. It was Republicans who voted for the Civil Rights Act in a much higher percentage than racist Dems. Today, we produce the lowest African-American unemployment ever under the Trump economic boom. Today, we produce the lowest African-American poverty levels ever under the Trump economic boom. Today, in 2017, I passed the largest expansion of federal school choice ever, making 529 plans cover K-12 over the objection of every single Senate Democrat. Also, he continues to tweet, just 2 years ago, the Dem governor of Virginia had put the photo of a man dressed as a KKK Klansman on his personal yearbook page. And today, the sitting Dem president, Joe Biden, gave in 2011 a flowery eulogy for an exalted cyclops of the KKK. Add to that, the Dem party aggressively supports open borders, which has led to the deaths and brutal assaults of thousands of Hispanics, and AOC somehow can't seem to find her white pantsuit to cry over their suffering. At that point, Elon Musk chimes in and he says, this is the kind of interaction that makes this platform so unique and entertaining. So all the while Ted Cruz is going off, Elon Musk is just sitting there reading it all. I wanted to share that at the expense of anything else that I was going to do in this segment, because it is so important that we continue to push back against the lies and the misrepresentation of what the Democrat Party stands for. It is simply repackaging what it did in the days of the Klan. That's all that's happening. And just think of the irony of how black Americans vote lockstep with the Dem Party. But it's changing. Thankfully, something else to spend some time on the morning show with Preston Scott, with my great red kazoo, Grant Allen over there in Studio 1A. I'm here in Studio 1B, and I am joined live and in person, and no one happier than he to be both of those things. Dr. Ed Moore joins us this morning on the morning show with Preston Scott. He's our own version of David McCullough.
Yeah, green side up.
The voice. That people recognize and go, I know that voice.
I was walking out of the DoubleTree the other day, and the guy out front, the head porter there, hollered at me and made me stop. He goes, haven't heard you on the radio lately. When are you back on Preston? Honest to goodness.
There you go.
And I don't know how he recognized me from my voice, but that kind of stuff happens a lot.
Yeah, of course. You have a very distinctive sound.
Well, I guess I do. I don't know.
Yeah. Like I said, David McCullough narrated the movie Seabiscuit, and people, what? Yeah, that's David McCullough. He was probably as popular of a narrator as he was inside the industry as he was an author to the rest of us.
My phone should start ringing off.
I would think so.
People calling, hey, we need you to narrate something.
Yep, yeah, okay, absolutely.
Good. New career.
Yep, there you go. He's our resident historian, hence the title More History here in the morning show. And we've been talking about scandals,
yes,
which is kind of appropriate in light of the fact that, you know, whether we like or hate Donald Trump, the fact of the matter is what happened to him, set aside the personality, but what happened to him was truly a scandal.
Yeah, and not much ado about it, which is what floors me typically in these kind of circumstances, no matter who's in power. You know, when there's corruption at any level, that should be ferreted out and broadcast, and yep. people should go, no, 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 we don't do that. Unfortunately, that's not what occurs in this divisive world we live in. Now it's politicized right away. But you know,
but it's literally criminal now what's happening in these some of these attacks, though, Ed.
Yeah, well, it is, and it isn't. I mean, the Durham report that came out, he was very explicit in stating that not everything that people do wrong is a crime. And that's why he wasn't advocating for indictments. Is it a crime for collusion of sorts, not criminal collusion, but just any kind of collusion to occur between media sources, the FBI, and a political operation or a political candidate? You know, if they're on the phone all the day, tipping each other off, telling each other, giving false stories, feeding false stories. When his report was replete with malintent, with bad intent by the Clinton campaign and others, and Obama.
So if it's short of criminal, there are still other accountability standards, and I'm just going to pick on one, and this is on topic and off topic at the same time. Adam Schiff, he should be kicked out of Congress.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, sure. But it's the voters' responsibility in that. I mean,
you don't think he should be removed by his peers?
They'd all be removed, or not all of them, but a significant number.
I'm okay with that.
I mean, if we got down to, you know, bad political acts, boy, oh boy. Hello, 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 hello. It'd be echoing down the hallways of Congress. It's almost a scarlet letter, you know, Nathaniel Hawthorne going way back, but it's almost that scarlet letter that the public needs to place on these people. They need to become pariahs when they misbehave. And yet, no.
But that supports my longstanding contention. We elect who we are.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah. We, you know, it's, what, Federalist 51, I think. I'm not sure if it was Hamilton or Madison who wrote that one, but, you know, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. You know, we must have this structure around us or we'll run astray.
But the bottom line here is far from the only scandal in history.
No, that's true. And sadly, though, and I'm going to talk the next two segments on the a big one, but that occurred that most people are aware of, but they don't really understand the details of it. We want things to happen instantaneously now. We're in this, you know, Pop-Tart society that we live in. you know, this stuff with Biden and, you know, I'm going to talk about the Nixon scandals. It took 27 months from the first Watergate break-in to him resigning. I mean, it took time.
Yeah.
And in between that, he won an election where he won 49 states when people were aware that there was something, you know, something rotten in Denmark here.
I think I'm going to cry and suck my thumb at the same time because the possibilities that you're bringing me to are just not good. All right, back with Dr. Ed Moore. More history on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
It's The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA or on News Radio WFLA PanamaCity.com.
It is 11 minutes after the hour. Dr. Ed Moore joins us. More history. Nixon. Go.
Yeah, boy, you could talk for days on this guy. Here's a guy.
I'm not a crook.
Yeah, he said that in Florida, actually. Here's a guy that was heading into re-election with an overwhelming lead and still got engaged first with the plumbers group that they had to tried to break into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office to try to get tidbits on to smear Ellsberg. That was the intent there because he was coming out with the Pentagon Papers that made Nixon look bad, and they were worried about this election coming up. Well, the election was 1972. Nixon won 49 states. George McGovern won Massachusetts and the District of Columbia. That was it. You know, so he was so paranoid about, oh my goodness, what might happen here, that he put into operation this group that were to do bad things. And they were relatively incompetent. Two of them were Cuban Americans from South Florida, one of whom was a locksmith. They broke into the Watergate complex and the DNC headquarters in May and to put bugs in and bugs around. And when they first tried it, they realized he had the wrong locksmith lock-picking tools. And they left. They actually went in, got all set up. It didn't work. They left, sent him back to Miami to get the right tools. This is, you know, it's like a Three Stooges routine. They went back in May. They broke in, put bugs in. Then they wanted more information. They wanted pictures of documents and all this. So they went back a month later, and they broke into the Watergate again and put tape keeping all the doors from locking behind them as they went in. Security guards found that, called the police. Police came in and arrested all these guys that were taking pictures. When they went in, they realized some of the bugs were missing, so they had already been discovered, but and didn't go, oh, hey, maybe we better get out of here. Maybe we're being rebugged or watched. No, they didn't. So they all get arrested. Well, it turns out in their bag of stuff was a phone number. The phone number was from what we referred to as CREEP, the Committee to Reelect the President. It was the phone number of CREEP. you're giving me this look, but this is, you know, this is the highest levels of the
sophisticated surveillance going on here.
Oh, absolutely. And being directed, as it turned out later, being directed basically out of the White House.
Yep.
You know, denials notwithstanding, it was being directed from the White House. These guys got all arrested, and a couple of young cub reporters for the Washington Post, one of them was assigned to go and see the hearings on these guys, these five guys. Why did they break into the Democratic headquarters for the bond hearings and stuff? So he sat in there, and that was Bob Woodward.
Well, but he wasn't just a cub reporter.
He was pretty new at that point in time.
He was an intelligence officer for the Navy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, I mean, there's a little bit of a background there.
Yeah, oh, yeah, very bright guy. And then the other guy, what's his name? I'm losing track.
Bernstein.
He goes, oh, yeah, I'll make some phone calls. I mean, this is how it started. You know, if you watch the movie in that sense was pretty accurate about Watergate. And it built and built. But it still took 27 months from that first break-in and the arrests to Nixon resigning. It was, and in between that was an election that was a landslide proportions. It was one of the biggest landslides ever in the history of our country. Why? I mean, you ask, why do these people do these things? Who knows? I mean, what went on in the minds of Haldeman and Ehrlichman and
Mitchell
John
and Dean.
Mitchell and Dean? I mean, the list is long. 44 people were investigated, and 22 of them actually convicted out of that at the highest levels in our country. And yet...
And one of them became a popular talk show host. Go figure.
Yeah, well, you know, got to earn a living. You know.
More with Dr. Ed Moore. Hey, did I just say that on The Morning Show with Preston Scott? Twenty-one past the hour. I think Grant and I would both come to the conclusion that time flies when you're talking history. But time really flies when you're talking more history. See how I did that, huh?
Oh, boy, you're so smooth.
Boy, am I a broadcast professional. Dr. Ed Moore with us.
I'm surprised you don't have on shades. You're so smooth.
Yeah. Smooth and I will never be mixed in the dictionary.
Yeah, well, there you go. My contention is and has been that we choose relatively poorly. The structure of how we pick who ends up in the White House is flawed. And it's getting more flawed as time goes by. We had the closest election in history in 2000, based on large part of what was going on in Florida, and none of those problems got resolved in that. That's how 2000 ended up, with Supreme Court of the United States punting. And it is what it is, because the calendar was moving and we got to be done by this date, and we couldn't get into all of that stuff. Still unresolved. So we could have potentially another 2000 election anytime now, because we are so relatively evenly divided in our philosophies. It's where we are. But in 1972, like I said, Nixon, overwhelming, he got almost 61% of the vote. Okay? 61% of the vote in 49 states he won. Why? Why do people in positions of power do foolish things. It floors me. I'll never
understand. They just not have any accurate polling? Because there was no need to do the stupid thing he did.
No, there wasn't. None at all. But there was a paranoia that occupied. And later, John Dean, in the famous presentation he made, but he talked about a meeting. He was general counsel in the White House, and he went to Nixon and told Nixon that there's a cancer growing in the White House. It wasn't a cancer. It was this mental paranoia that was bleeding through his top level of staff people. And the highest levels were involved and got corrupted, but then got convicted. John Mitchell, Attorney General, went to jail. Maurice Stans, the Secretary of Commerce, went to jail. Chief of Staff, General Counsel. I mean, right all the way down the line.
Right.
Everybody did, but Richard Nixon. And because Richard Nixon, a month after he resigned, Gerald Ford pardoned him. One almost to the day, a month, Gerald Ford pardoned him, and a lot of people were highly critical. I think it probably cost Ford the election in doing that. Ford had, I think, a sense of history and wanted to do what he thought was best in the healing that needed to be done at that point in time, and so he took that bold action. He was the only one at that point to get pardoned. There were only two people involved in all of Watergate, two people that got pardoned, the president and the locksmith from Cuban American locksmith from Miami. He got pardoned by Ronald Reagan. And then later it found out that he was a CIA asset and had been involved in working for the CIA prior to the Watergate break and had connections with G. Gordon Liddy and others. But
we ever ask him if the mistake with the pick locks was intentional?
Much. He never said much, and I think the fellow lived, I think, to be 98. He lived a very long time, moved back to Florida, and lived in some small town with his daughter in Florida. But those are the only two people out of all these people to get a pardon. It's kind of an interesting little tidbit, but when I rediscovered that. I knew that way back, and then when I rediscovered that, I thought, that's really odd. Why did he get a pardon when I saw that he was one that got the pardon? And yeah, he worked for the CIA, and part of the deal back then, they inadvertently discovered the fact that Richard Nixon was taping himself. Nobody else had ever done that to that extent in the White House. They were over 3,000 hours of tape that got turned over, some missing segments, the famous gap that, I must have leaned way over and shut it off, but John Dean, in his testimony, revealed that. And how did John Dean know? He didn't know he was being taped. He thought he might be being taped because when he was making a presentation to Richard Nixon in the Oval Office, Nixon said, hey, wait just a second, walked over with him to the corner of the room and very quietly told him some things, and then went back and sat down, and they continued their conversation. And John Dean, being very astute, said, why did he do that?
It wasn't for a photo op.
Yeah, and then an aide called Butterfield was testifying and got asked the question, are there tapes? And his immediate response to Congress when they asked him about, was there a taping system in the White House, his immediate response was, I wish you hadn't asked me that question. And then proceeded to tell them, we have this comprehensive taping system.
Oh, boy.
But my main point, though, is there's corruption. There's been corruption. I've been alive for 14 presidents since I was a baby. Only three of them really had relatively scandal-free administrations, the 11 of the 14.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Could you say Trump was scandal-free?
No.
Why?
Well, because there just were all kinds of things going on. We can talk about that the next time. What's occurred probably since Bush 43 to now. Which kinds of levels of corruption. And it's not necessarily the guy himself, the president himself, that's the one that's corrupt. But then it's the people around him that are getting paid off and things happening at the Pentagon and government contracts. It's
scandals.
It's where the leadership comes from.
You have to say it that way. Scandals.
Scandals, yes.
Scandals.
Yes.
All right, so we'll talk about that next month?
Yeah, if men were angels, where no government would be necessary. Always keep that in mind.
Dr. Ed Moore with us. Thanks, bud. It's 28 after the hour.
With the morning show, Preston Scott.
Chris writes in, listening ears want to know what scandals he's referring to with Trump. That was a complete cop-out answer. Or will he actually follow up? Because if he's referring to Trump and Fauci, that could be the biggest scandal in American history. But was it Trump or Fauci to blame? No, it's not a cop-out answer. It's called we're out of time. So, you know, with all due respect, Chris, to that idea. No, we ran out of time. But no, we will talk about that next visit with Dr. Moore. You know, the thing is, Trump was certainly victimized by scandal that's around him, and it should cost Adam Schiff his job. I don't think necessarily by the voters, because the voters will keep him in office. It should cost him his job in Congress because he claimed that he had evidence of fill in the blank, and he didn't. He doesn't. There wasn't any. And so that said, Fauci, that's an interesting idea. I think Trump was somewhat mistaken to rush into the whole however many days to find a vaccine thing. But I think Trump, in his defense, I can't stand being that person, in defense, he's not a medical doctor. He had to rely on the people around him, and sadly, Fauci was that guy. And I've said it dozens and dozens of times. Trump's biggest mistake wasn't even the vaccine thing. His biggest mistake was letting Fauci be almost the sole voice in his ear. That was the mistake. That Fauci became the be-all, end-all of this, and no one did their research on Anthony Fauci. Anyway. That's a story for another day. Final half hour for the week of the program. We are off tomorrow, back on Tuesday after the long weekend. I wanted to give a little shout out. And for those of you in the area looking for something different to do on Memorial Day, besides the obvious, and remembering those who have died in defense of our nation, that's the point of Memorial Day. There is an open farm fun day on Monday at Redemptive Love Farm and Rescue. Now, I learned about them when our kids did something for their mom for Mother's Day. They brought the Redemptive Love Farm and Rescue two adorable piglets to our home. And if you know anything about my sweet, lovely wife, Cynthia, you know she loves pigs. And these two came in a baby carriage. And it was awesome. And in talking to them, they've got over 200 animals at their farm. And they raise these animals, and some of them give birth, and then they sell some of the animals that are raised. They have, I think, camels, llamas. They've got chickens and ducks and cows and horses and pigs and you name it. And they open up the farm on Memorial Day. And so if you're interested in that, it's just $5 admission. They have some other things. If you go to their website, you can learn more. They have a family fun pass that's available. And so if you're interested, just look them up. It's Redemptive Love Farm and Rescue, and then you'll see about the Memorial Fun Day that's coming up this Monday. And who knows? We may pay a visit. I'm just saying. I'm a sucker for that stuff. 41 minutes after the hour.
The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Before we share a dad joke, got to arm you for the weekend. And some headlines from the B, since it's the final show of the week. Wanted to share a good news story. This was shared by our lead research assistant on the morning show with Preston Scott. Tell you about a guy named Fred Taylor. La Mesa, California now. He said, you know, every able-bodied man and lots of women were involved in World War II. I have no regrets about going into service. I really enjoyed flying. My only regret is missing my graduation ceremony, as you normally would end your senior year. He completed all the requirements to get his music degree from Cornell College in Iowa, but was unable to attend due to activation of the Air Corps Reserves in 1943. He'd completed the requirements for his music degree at Cornell College, but the attack on Pearl Harbor changed everything and put his plans for the actual graduation on hold. He said, some friends and I joined the Army Air Corps Reserve because we wanted to fly rather than be foot soldiers. On February 19th, 1943, of my senior year, the Air Corps Reserves were activated and we had to leave the college for basic training in Jefferson Barracks in Missouri. So, of course, we missed our graduation ceremony, and that was a very incomplete feeling. His dad drove 10 miles to campus to pick up his diploma while he was away. He said, I have no regrets about going into the service. My only regret is missing my graduation ceremony, as you normally would end your senior year. Fred is now 101 years old. And earlier this year, his daughter, a professor emeritus now at the University of Miami, contacted Cornell College to see if it was possible for her father to walk across the stage. Said the president of Cornell College, to find out that we had a student who 80 years ago missed that culminating moment in his life to actually celebrate the completion of his study, there's sort of this feeling that something wasn't finished. Here's somebody who served our country during World War II, somebody who left college so that he could help literally save the world from the greatest threat. What a wonderful way to honor him in front of our students. And so, 101 year old and 80 years after actually getting his degree, Fred Taylor walked at graduation. The president said it was heartwarming, it was emotional. He's gracious, humble, articulate, warm, loving. He's everything that one could ever hope a Cornellian would be. I think there was love for him because of his connection to Cornell, because of his military service, because of his endurance. Every time I mentioned his name, a standing ovation. That just, man, come on. Tear duct. Overload, 47 minutes, 46 minutes after the hour. Okay, to reiterate, we are off tomorrow and Monday. Remember, Monday, Memorial Day, is the time that you just make sure that sometime over the weekend when you're gathered together with family and friends, maybe doing some grilling, enjoying your day, doing whatever it is that you're doing, take some time to remember in prayer those who have lost loved ones and those who have honored this country by giving their last full measure of service in defense of it, men and women throughout the years. That's what Memorial Day is about. It's about honoring those who have died in service to this country in our armed services. So please do that. Back Tuesday, Matt Staver will join us. We'll, of course, be talking more about the rollout of the Ron DeSantis campaign, the reaction across the board, left, right, and in the middle. And Matt Staber will join us to talk about a new academy that Liberty Council is beginning. That an online school for K-12 that is, I'm loving it. I've seen the outline for the curriculum and so forth. I am loving it. But first, before we get to some headlines from the Babylon Bee, we have to go ahead and arm you with a dad joke. Why should you wear glasses during math class?
I don't know.
They say it improves division.
I like that one. Division.
Time for some headlines from your trusted source for satire, ladies and gentlemen. These are headlines from the Babylon Bee. Republicans win Emmy for acting like government spending makes them sad.
It's true, though.
Wife boycotts Target, costing company millions per year. Psst. Hey, kid. Want to change your gender? Says Target dog emerging from clothes rack. Job finally loses will to live as phone dies. Adolf Hitler announces run for president. Dodgers summon Satan to throw out first pitch at Pride Night. Sanctuary City bummed now that it has to actually do the sanctuary part. Google Doodle celebrates first indigenous transgender water skier with no legs. Nation's husbands now praying Hobby Lobby does something stupid. Dodgers replace seventh inning stretch with chant of Hail Satan. Marriage put to ultimate test as couple hangs curtains together. Oof. California grants Lakers reparations of 10 extra points after playoff loss. Netflix announces wife mode function that explains entire movie before it starts. And wife calls off Target a boycott 5 seconds after walking into Walmart. Those are your headlines of the Babylon Bee, your trusted source for satire.
Brought to you by Barino Heating and Air. It's the Morning Show 180 on WFLA.
Look back at the radio program in 180 seconds or less. The announcement is made. Ron DeSantis is in the race. And now the fun starts. For his part, the Donald reacted as anticipated. We talked about that during the program. Ted Cruz reminds AOC of her own Democrat Party, founded by the KKK, writing of the Jim Crow laws. It was a Twitter exchange that AOC was left speechless, and that's always a good thing. That's always a good thing. Email from a research assistant. New York City will begin tracking the carbon footprint of household food consumption, putting caps on how much red meat can be served in public institutions as part of a sweeping initiative to reduce carbon emissions by 33% from food in 2030. So now the city of New York wants to determine how much food you eat. You can bet this won't affect the mayor and his buddies. He'll eat steak as much as he wants, as often as he wants. Covered a lot of other ground as well. The show's worth it. It's the podcast. Get it, listen, enjoy it. Back Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening.